It's Gerard Whateley. Thanks for listening to the podcast. In this episode, Patrick Dangerfield in the aftermath of yesterday's Easter Monday encounter, and Ben Buckley after a horror weekend for North Melbourne, the chairman plotting the course for the future. Talk back on the booing of Gary Ablett, no shortage of opinions being offered this morning. A road trip between two dads that originated when their sons were playing at Moonee Valley all the way through to the AFL, and a look back at the modern viability of the stall gift. Get in touch with the program at any time, Whateley@sen.com.au. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Good morning. In the off-Broadway years on the Gold Coast, hidden away from the big stages and main events, Gary Ablett had a knack of producing a moment that could draw the footy world together in raptures from Pier and Barracca alike. Buried in the twilight of a largely inconsequential game, Ablett would conjure a goal that thrust him back into the collective imagination, prompting a wave of universal affection. His return to the heartland of the code has largely been dominated by a measurement of his decline and a countdown to hasten the end, lacking any real note of appreciation for a walk-up Hall of Famer and a likely future legend. Yesterday, though, in the showpiece Easter Monday encounter, the Little Master rolled out a few of his greatest hits. It happened curiously in a heightened environment of booing, fueled by Hawthorn fans for reasons that are open to interpretation and debate. But much like the feats of Eddie Betts, the on-field deeds of Gary Ablett gave a powerful reminder of what has made him an all-time great.
Atkins takes it, stood in the tackle, got it off to Dalhouse, not enough on the snap. Ablett! Flew over the top of Mirror and takes a hanger near the goal square. Ablett swings around. Ablett! Kicks the goal.
Gary Rowan's going to fly across the pack. He didn't mark. Shark bite, Dalhouse. Here's Ablett again. He's kicked it from the pocket this time, kept it low, a vacant square, and he has put it through. He's having the time of his life, Gary Ablett. Identifies Selwood, has to get through Warple. He did. He gave it to Ablett. Selwood to Ablett to goal. Yes! And the Cats fans rejoice. Three goals to the Little Master.
It is a big game, obviously. You know, it's obviously there's that rivalry and plenty of close matches over the years. So, look, they've obviously got a few plays out. We knew it was going to be a high-running game and just super proud of the boys.
And you wound back the clock today. Three goals for yourself.
Yeah, it's always nice to keep a few goals. Obviously, a bit of a different role for me this year up forward and really enjoying it.
Did you hear the crowd booing you today or does that just go straight over your head? You don't listen to it?
I reckon it happens most weeks, so you get used to it. But, hey, look, it was good to get the win.
So Eddie Betts on Sunday and Gary Ablett on Monday. Lovely reminders of what makes the game so great. We'll work through all of this morning. We'll go back over all that took place on telly last night. It's the one day of rest in this Easter Anzac Day phase. And the North Melbourne chairman is going to join me as well, Ben Buckley, on just after 10:30. But let's start with a man who was part of yesterday. He's the president of the Players Association, Patrick Dangerfield. Paddy, welcome back to SEN.
Morning, Jared.
What did you make of Gary Ablett yesterday?
Oh, it was just extraordinary to be out there. It was it's funny, I've been lucky enough to play obviously with Gary, but Eddie as well. And those two players, you can truly be out there and just be in awe of what they're able to do, and the crowd just totally embrace it, and it's pretty special when they're kicking those miraculous goals, they're taking those incredible hangers, and there's few times during a game of sport that you're able to actually sit back and appreciate greatness. Yesterday was one of those moments where you could sit back and just think to yourself, wow.
He doesn't take many high marks. So I did rather like the sentiment that it was expressed yesterday that in the 100 greatest marks taken by a Gary Ablett, Junior now has one.
we were having a bit of a chuckle actually after the game, and having a bit of a dig at the little man, because he did say that's about the highest he's ever got off the ground, and he felt like he was in the skies. And then he seen the replay, and it wasn't quite as high as he thought it was. But it just all reminded us, you know, the freakish talent that he is, and he's been doing some wonderful things for us this year. But yesterday he just put on a show, and he was just extraordinary.
Give us an insight into the buy-in. So one of the biggest debates of the off-season was, could Gary Ablett become a semi-permanent forward? Could he sacrifice his game the way it's been over more than a decade to play a different role in the twilight? How have you observed the way he's committed himself to it and the first 5 weeks of it?
Look, for us, it's been nothing but commitment from Gaz, and from the very first training session of the preseason. I think Scotty made it really clear with sort of the different positional changes that he wanted right throughout the team, and obviously Gaz was a really big one of those. And I think what it's given him is real clarity, rather than it sort of being, you know, 60 midfield, 40 forward. When you're able just to play in that one position, you know, he's got clarity with what he needs to do, where he needs to set up. You're not resting down there as a forward. You're playing as that forward. So his pressure's gone through the roof. And it's just a really good mix down there. I think our forwards at the moment are really complementing each other.
How important was it in what you'd identified out the back of last year and the approach to this year?
Well, look, we had a real issue in being able to keep the ball inside our forward 50. And if Richmond have shown us anything over the last few years, it's just how crucial that forward pressure is, being able to lock the ball in your forward half. And that's become even more apparent with the 6-6-6 rule, because you're not playing against extra numbers in defence from centre bounce and stoppages generally. So if you can trap the ball in your forward half, it does enable you to play the game in your half for longer periods of time. And that means, you know, the opposition are in defense longer, and they're putting more effort into chasing rather than attacking. So when you do inevitably turn the ball over, they just have less energy for attack.
What did you think of the booing of Ablett yesterday? Did you think it was more than usual?
I didn't really think about it too much at the time, to be honest. I hadn't looked into the fact whether it was because of his lack of Izzy Flowers post. It's sort of something that we've just, you know, come to know with Gaz. People boo him because he's so great. And it was comical out there, because he was just playing so well. And it's like the louder the boos got, the greater he got. And he had the last laugh.
Do you think he gets that most weeks, or was this distinct?
I really don't think he thought too much about it. I think he's copped it for so much of his career, the envy or jealousy of other supporters. Maybe it goes back to when Senior left Hawthorn, that, you know, they're still feeling they missed out and they could have had him as a father-son. But look, as a player, I think the really good ones really revel in it. We saw that with Andrew Gaff, you know, in the early rounds. And I think the best players in the competition just, they don't let it faze them. They use it as a driving force, and it's not going to stop Gaz. So you can boo him as much as you like. He'll keep doing his thing.
If he was booed in part because of the like of the Israel Folau tweet, would that concern you?
Oh, look, it would. I mean, booing is a part of our game. Perhaps. I mean, Gaz shared a post during the week clarifying, I suppose, his comments and the fact that it was around admiring how strong Izzy Folau is in his faith. Now, you don't have to agree with it or with all parts of it. I certainly don't. But you've got to be allowed to have your say, and it might have been a bit of a misspoken like at different stages, but you know, we hang people pretty quickly nowadays, and I didn't think there was too much in it.
Did you talk to Gary at all about it in your role as either a teammate or with the Players Association?
No, I didn't feel the need to be honest, Jared. I just didn't feel it was that big of an issue. Gary's a really strong Christian. He has strong Christian beliefs, and that's fine. Everyone is entitled to their own views on the world. He's made it really clear that he loves all people, regardless of you know, race, religion, gender, sexuality. So, you know, a like can mean certain parts of the post that he believed in. It doesn't mean that he believed in it at all, but we jump to conclusion and say, well, he must believe in, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Did you kick the ball the wrong way twice at the start of the game yesterday?
Jared, I had hoped you would not bring this up this morning.
I was calling and it was a bewildering moment. Have I got this wrong? And then I'm utterly convinced that you had it wrong.
Oh, God, baby brain. Ricky Henderson, who I've spent a fair bit of time with, he actually said during the game, "You're going the other way, Coco, a bit of baby brain from you." So we had a bit of a chuckle on the ground. I don't know what I was thinking.
Have you done that ever?
I've never done it ever. I've seen it happen twice, Bernie Vince and Clarkie a few weeks back. At least he didn't kick it in the wrong direction, but... Oh, God, the funny things happen on the field, Jared.
At what point did you realise, hang on, I think I've buggered this up?
When I kicked it and Collar was staring me in the face, and I thought, well, Collar's not playing forward. He hasn't kicked too many goals in his career, if any. So, anyway, lucky it didn't hurt us in the long run.
One more on yesterday. Chris Scott spoke last night that he made the effort to almost induct the first timers to Easter Monday and to the Hawthorn rivalry in the rhythms of it, in the traditions of it, in the rituals of it. Now, this is something that you lived through a few years back. How important is it that a player group from both sides recognise the history of this and the capacity to carry it on?
I think it's really important, and Chris and the coaching staff did a wonderful job of really building it up and acknowledging the history, you know, and I suppose the more recent history for our younger players that really understand it. And we showed some wonderful footage of some great Geelong wins and a disappointing 08 grand final, just to really sow the seeds of what it all means. And it's amazing how many games have just been so close in the dying seconds, and it's been anyone's game. So, I think in games like that, regardless of whether it's Easter Monday or it's Anzac or those real rivalry games, you've got to embrace the moment, because there's very few opportunities in sport and during the season that you get those opportunities to play in front of 60, 70, 80,000 people. So don't shut it out. Embrace it. Enjoy it, because it just doesn't happen all that often.
Patrick Dangerfield is the president of the Players Association and a broad advocate for more access in the media. So what is your view, Paddy, on in-game interviews with players?
Look, I think if players are happy to do it, and obviously different clubs are in different positions in trying to promote their own brand, then go for it. I found it totally bemusing that Damien Barrett would hammer Luke Hodge the way that he did, knowing that players really do not get paid compared to what a lot of other endorsements that Luke would have. It is on the absolute minuscule scale. He's not doing it for remuneration. He's doing his commentary during the year, I think, as a potential segue for his career once footy finishes, or it's to promote the Brisbane brand. I think comments like his are really damaging to the media wanting more access for players, because as soon as you see Luke Hodge, a champion of our game, best and fairest All-Australian, premiership captain, one of the best players to ever play our game, get hammered for his commentary on the game, for trying to promote it, if he's going to get hammered by the media, then what hope do others have? And I've had players message me and say, I can get stuffed. This is the media, because why would I put myself out there when I'm going to get absolutely hammered for it? So I think the damage that one, whether it was an off-the-cuff, you know, sliding doors moment for his column, I think the broader damage that has had over a really short period of time is going to be really negative for the insight that we get from our players, which is really disappointing.
What do you think, there has been an increased willingness in players to participate, or have you noticed an increased caution, sort of separate to to this three-day period?
No, I think there has been an increased willingness to participate. And, you know, you only need to look as far as the different programs that are now running on a Monday night. I mean, the Oval Office is a really good example of this, where players really are driving the agenda. I mean, Sam McClure is in the chair to, you know, to host, but really he's sitting back, he's prompting, and then it's just letting Mitch Duncan, it's letting Devin Smith go hell for leather and give their opinion on games and on the code. Now, what an article like that can do for the players that were perhaps thinking about, yeah, I might give the media a go. I might do something different or embrace an idea that the club had come up with or Channel 7 or Fox had come up with. That goes as soon as the negatives flow in, because you don't have to do it as a player. I think we all have a role to play in growing our game so that by the time the next CBA comes, as players, we're in a really healthy, strong position, that there's more people watching it, there's more people enjoying our game. But that really does damage, I think, the media's ability to get really in-depth conversation around the game.
What's your personal attitude to in-game interviews? Is that your sanctuary? Is that the part that you don't like disturbed, or have you done it from time to time?
I've done it from time to time. I don't really, I don't see anything wrong with it. It's 20 seconds. You're not sitting there for 3 or 4 minutes dissecting the game. It's a quick throwaway. Now, I understand people have different opinions to that, and that's absolutely fine. And unfortunately, I think Caroline Wilson was really accurate when she was talking last night about different clubs being in different positions to really have to grow their brand. And some of the clubs, they don't have to put themselves in a position for that. But we've got to understand this is not a level playing field, unfortunately. And different clubs need to promote their brand and put their sponsors front of mind, because that's what, you know, that's what they sold and that's what they were able to secure them for. So we've got to be careful about hanging players who, you know, have been the messenger for it, really.
Do you like the stretch of footy we're in at the moment where all bar today there are games across 11 days?
To be honest, I love it. I love it. I think it's great. The season itself has been nothing short of just unimaginable and brilliant. You just don't know who's going to win from game to game. Form lines are irrelevant. We've seen a team that has been incredibly undermanned and lost a huge amount of players through injury in St Kilda playing such a wonderful brand of footy. And other teams alike that we thought would be better than they are that have just been beaten by teams that have been hungry. Like, it's just been such a great season of ebbs and flows. And I think, the powers that be at AFL House would be pretty happy with how things are going, because as a supporter, you just never know.
Mm. And so are there teams that so delightfully surprise you, and then there are teams like, do you look at Melbourne and go, gee, I wonder what's happened there from the team that was so powerful against you in an elimination final?
Well, they absolutely obliterated us, Jared, to be frank. So, yeah, you do wonder. But the great thing about our game is things can change so quickly. It only takes one game to be in form. It takes, there's plenty of games where you're out of form, but it only takes, it can take a quarter where you start to build that momentum. And, confidence is a funny thing. If you could bottle it, you would, but you can't. Because I think that the talent in most teams is pretty similar. You've just got to be able to, extract as much of it as you possibly can. And the teams that are playing well at the moment, are doing that. So you've just got to find ways to get yourself in form individually, and then collectively it will come.
How have you discovered the art of that over the years? What did Dennis Pagan used to say? You can't go down the shop and buy confidence. How do you drag yourself back to form?
I tell you what, if you could go down and buy it, there'd be a line as from here to Western Australia. There honestly would be. Footy's a pretty simple game when you break it right down. And most teams, when they get in a really difficult position and you're not winning games of footy, you strip everything back and you make it as simple as you possibly can. So the message is really simple, but fundamentally, your role within the team really simplifies. If you're an inside mid, all you need to worry about is protecting space, winning contested footy, and getting it forward. Let's not complicate it any more than that. As a forward, be ready in the contest. Play from in front. When you have your opportunities to finish, do that. Defender, you know, beat your opponent and then set up the ground after that. So you really strip it back and you try and build form from that, because if you can do those simple things well, then the form will come and, you know, your talent will rise. But it's tough, and every player goes through it at different stages. When you're out of form and it's like the ball is just bouncing the opposite direction and you're just working so hard to impact games. But it changes quickly.
We started with Gary Ablett. We might finish with Eddie Betts. Did that put a smile on your face to see him do that in his 300th game?
Oh, it was just magnificent. I think universally, I'm not sure there's been a player that's been admired by so many supporter. I think every supporter base, even Carlton, the team that he'd played for and left, they still love him. And that just speaks to just what a amazing player he's been. He's been a far better person than he's been player, to be honest. The influence that he's had over the Adelaide group, I know from first hand, has been nothing short of amazing. And I think you've got to look at Ed's family as well. His wife, Anna, I think, has been a really big part of Eddie's wonderful career, and then obviously his boy. So you couldn't not watch that with a smile on your face. And when he kicked that left foot check side from the boundary line, it was just like it was meant to happen.
It does feel like he will leave a legacy in the game beyond just one of the great highlight reels, which in its own right will endure and last.
Yeah, it does. And it was funny looking at the early highlights of Ed. I swear he looked older then than he does now. And there is a little bit of a rinse that goes through that hair. So don't think that that shiny black hair is all natural. There's a little bit of peroxide in that. But he does. I don't think you can't watch a game of Eddie Betts play and not smile. I don't think you can say his name and not smile. And that's such a special thing to have in our code. We've been privileged to watch him.
Actually, I do want to ask you one more. Did you, just going back a week, you got fined for flinging the arm back into Matt DeBoer. Did you reflect on that much?
Yeah, I did. I was disappointed in the way that I played, and you just get so frustrated at different stages because you're trying to create separation. Because as much as we talk about, in a marking contest, you're not allowed to block as a player goes for the footy. Well, there's not a huge amount that's seen off the ball where you're just trying to run position. You're being constantly blocked. So as a player, you've got to try and, bury that frustration so you don't do something stupid. And I look back and thought, when you're well beaten, you just got to find a way to influence others or influence the game more than just trying to throw an elbow back. So it was a disappointing week, no doubt. But at the same time, I didn't think there's a huge amount in it. I think if I'd moved every time there was contact like that, then I'd be on the ground most of the game.
Okay. And good on you, Paddy. And good to chat. We'll talk again in a couple of weeks and see where all matters across the AFL landscape are then.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks for having me.
Patrick Dangerfield's a regular on the program throughout the year. So there's a lot in there, media access, the in-game interviews, the media's attitude, as we do tend to have it both ways in these things. I think that's a legitimate criticism. And then what happened on the field yesterday, the joy of Gary Ablett and the booing of Gary Ablett. There's enough messages here to suggest that you want to have your say. 1-300-736-736. Give me a call. We'll go through some of what was discussed last night, North Melbourne. The chairman, Ben Buckley, is going to join me at 10:30. We'll look back over Melbourne. Josh Jenkins has spoken this morning about the realities of being dropped. There's the Hawkins elbow back into the back of James Sicily. So it's all on the agenda to discuss. 1-300-736-736 to join me. North Melbourne are a hot-button topic at the start of the 2019 season, and the chairman, Ben Buckley, is with me on the program. Ben, welcome to SEN.
Morning, Jared.
Are you alarmed by the start of the 2019 season?
Well, we're certainly concerned about it and frustrated by it. And I think, as I've said in the last few days, I like all of our supporters and members, are are hurting by the performance, and I know our coaching staff and our player group are hurting in particular.
Why did you choose to bring the leadership together on Sunday?
Well, I think it's important that when anything in any organisation is not going to plan, that the leaders of the organisation get together and have an honest conversation about where we're at, what we need to do to turn things around and to get together to reinforce our support for one another. And that was the purpose of it.
Did you want some answers? Did you get some answers?
Well, I don't think you're going to get the answers immediately, but what we did discuss and certainly I put to the group was that we need to challenge the way we're doing things. We need to look for new ways to do things, and we need to come up with solutions to turn it around. But it is, you know, whilst it's, you know, we're 1-4 and not happy with where we're at, it's an extremely competitive competition. It's an even competition, and if we get things turned around, the season can change very quickly.
In the search to do things differently, so as you rightly point out, it's 5 rounds in, does that suggest that you didn't have things set up the way that they should have been heading into the season?
Well, I think in any circumstances where you're not performing to the level that you want to perform, you have to go back and question what you've been doing and what you could do differently. But right now, it's not so much about focusing on what's happened. It's really focusing on what we need to do now to get things right and get back on to a consistent performing level.
Do you worry that the club, Ben, is in no man's land, halfway between competing for a premiership with a fully developed list and a bunch of youngsters rebuilding?
Well, I think, you know, we're our harshest critics and we understand where we're positioned. And when we finished the 2016 season and we went into effectively a regeneration or rebuild of our list, we knew it would take some years to get back to competing, you know, with the best, the very best in the competition. But what we did show, you know, in 17 and through large parts of 18, that at our very best, we can be as competitive as anyone in the competition. And we've got to find that, you know, we've got to find that spark. We've got to find the thing that turned it around very quickly last year. And we've got to get back to that. That's what we've got to do. That's what we've got to focus on.
Is there a difference between being as competitive as anyone in the competition and taking aim at building a premiership run?
Yes, I think that's generally correct. I think you've got to have the foundations in place, and that can take some years to put in place to get to a genuine tilt at the premiership. And I think, you know, we were under no illusions that might take a few years to get the foundations in place to have a genuine tilt at the, you know, the top four and beyond. Last year, I think we managed to perform to a level that was probably above our expectation based on that roadmap, but that was a pleasing thing. And now we've got to find a way to get back to that level, because we're certainly capable of it.
Was there a deviation from the roadmap by bringing in the four experienced players from elsewhere?
Not entirely. We always said that along that path that we were going down, that we would seek to bring in external players to build our list and bring in players where we needed to bolster our depth and also bolster weaknesses that we had in the side, and we did that. But we weren't going to do that at any cost. And I think if you look at a number of the players that we brought in, they certainly didn't cost us a great deal in terms of draft picks.
Do they cost you, though, in what takes the field and what's being developed?
Well, I think you've got to look at that in a circumstantial sense. Obviously, part of that group was to add to our depth, and when you lose some players through injury, you've got to bring those guys in to replace them. But I don't think that we've deviated from the fact that we do have a list that is building, and we've got to give those players the opportunities, and we'll continue to do that.
Over a lengthy period of time, Ben, has the the first round recruiting been inadequate? Are there too many misses there? Has the club not developed the players who have come in to a degree where they have taken the mantle and driven the club forward?
Well, I think that's an analysis that we need to work through. But I would say that, there was a period of time there where clearly some of the selections, haven't gone the way we would have expected them to, or the recruiters would have expected them to, and that's probably leaving some gaps in the list that we have to focus on and build on.
How in tune with the level of disgruntlement in your supporter group are you?
Sorry, Jared, am I?
Yeah. How aware of it? How attuned to your own supporters and the level of disgruntlement which seems to be building?
Are you? Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm an avid listener to all of the various media outlets. I see what's written in social media. I see what's written by opinion writers in the newspaper. I hear what people say on talkback radio. So there's no one more attuned to the level of dissatisfaction that our members currently feel than myself and the rest of the board. We're very aware of it.
How would you depict it? Is it civil unrest?
Oh, look, I think it's general frustration and disappointment with where we sit, and I've acknowledged that, and I said that we all feel that. But what I do know about this football club is that, when times are tough and our backs are against the wall, we stay united, we stay focused, and we're fixated on finding solutions to the problems, not pointing fingers and throwing people under the bus.
So fingers get pointed from the outside. One of those is towards you. Are you able to dedicate enough time to the position with your current professional circumstances?
Well, I certainly believe that I do that. And, a large portion of my time is taken up with football club matters. Like any chairman or president of a football club, I have other interests and professional interests, and they take up a period of time as well. But I think on balance, the amount of time that myself and the rest of the board give to the football club would be consistent with any other club in the competition. And if that's not the case, then we will double down and dedicate ourselves to working with the management group to work through those issues.
So how much time are you able to spend around the club, Ben, to get a feel for what's going on?
Well, I'm in Melbourne every week. I know people have pointed out that I live in Sydney, and I've always acknowledged that, and I've never hidden from that. But I am in Melbourne 2 or 3 days each week, and I'm at most of the games, and I think that's an appropriate amount of time.
On the coaching front, do you believe that in his 10th season, Brad Scott is capable of producing a team that can soon enough challenge for a premiership?
Well, I think the answer to that is twofold. One, we've seen in the past that Brad has more than enough capability to produce teams that can be competitive and can be competitive in final series. And he's managed to do that in seasons gone by. And I think what we saw in the last 2 years is that he's capable of taking charge of a different list, and a list that's not as experienced and maybe doesn't have the talent that it did in previous years, and working with that to get it to a competitive position. To compete for we're under no illusions, to compete for a premiership, take some years to get the foundations in place, and I think that he's proven his ability to do that.
Well, when you're 10 years in, you've been to two preliminary finals during that tenure, how long do you have to build the next wave?
Well, I don't think you can put an exact time frame on that. What we need to see from not only, our coaching staff and Brad, but the rest of our football department, is that they have the foundations in place to make sure that we can work our way up the ladder and ultimately be competitive in finals and, over a period of time, compete for the ultimate prize.
Do you so unequivocally believe that Brad Scott is your man?
Well, I'm about supporting Brad and the rest of the coaching staff in getting things right for this season. That's what we're about and that's what we're focused on. Right now, all of our energy is being put towards how do we turn this season around, and that's what we're about.
So what do you expect to see in the short term?
Well, as I've said to the leaders themselves, what we want to see and what supporters want to see is a consistent, sustained, competitive effort. And I think we've seen some periods of that in the early part of the season, but we haven't seen enough of it to produce, you know, consistent winning outcomes. So we've got to get back to playing that style of football that is ultra competitive, ultra intense. And when we do that, we know we can win football games.
So did you get an answer, or do you have a theory as to why that marker, which has been the marker of the Kangaroos in their best years for a long time, is not there at the moment?
Well, I don't think we have the exact answer right here today, but that's something that we've got to challenge ourselves to find and to come up with the answers in the short term to get us to get back to that level, because we certainly know we're capable of it. And I'm confident that the guys will work around the clock and leave no stone unturned to find a way to get our team back to playing that competitive brand of football that we enjoy watching.
It's one thing to face these questions in the back portion of a season. It's another in the front part. So what can 2019 now amount to in your eyes?
Well, I think what we've got to do is, one, get back to that sustained competitive effort. That's the first thing that we need to see. The second is we need to see improvement from parts of the playing group that we expected to see by now, and we have to find out ways and look at ways that we can get that group of players to come on. And ultimately, we've got to find a way to shape the list so that it can be competitive in the future. And they're questions that we'll obviously address throughout the course of the year.
And in that, is part of it holding the club, the people together, not the employees, but the broader North Melbourne community, making sure that they are there on game day, and the level of dissatisfaction that you spoke of doesn't lead to people disconnecting from the club?
Well, that's right. And I would say to all of our members and supporters that now is a time to come together. Now is a time to be unified. Obviously, we're disappointed, and we as a board and we as a management group will challenge each other to find those answers. But now is the right time to be united in our approach and support one and all. And we'll address any of the structural issues that we may have during the course of the year.
And what about the shin bonus spirit, the identity of the club and various playing groups along the way? What is tangible in that, Ben? What do you hope that the current generation carries from what's happened previously?
Well, I think it comes back to that never beaten attitude, and that's something that we talk about a lot as being at the core of the shin bonus spirit, whether that's on the field or whether it's off the field. That's what we've been known for. That's where we've been able to build an identity over the last decade or so, and that comes from generations past as well. And, you know, that never beaten, ultra competitive, intense football club. We may not be the biggest club in the nation. We may not always have the best talent available, but we will ultimately fight with an intensity and a spirit that is a never beaten attitude. And that's what we talk about, and that's what we need to instill into everyone. But I would say that, you know, we have shown in recent times that we still can produce that, and we've got to get back to being able to do that repeatedly.
Is there a challenge to staying relevant in the broader national conversation?
Well, I see comments made about relevancy. I mean, ultimately, you're relevant if you're competing for finals and you're competing for higher ladder positions. That's what's relevant to the competition on a year-to-year basis. We're 150 years old. We've been around a long time. We've got an extremely proud history and tradition. We want to maintain that. I think we're as relevant as a football club as we've ever been. We may not be as competitive as we want to be right now, but I'm sure we'll get back to that level during the course of the year.
Ben, appreciate your time this morning. Good luck for what's to come.
Great. Thanks, Jared.
Ben Buckley, the North Melbourne chairman, 1300 736 736. In the aftermath, there's been no shortage of Kangaroos calls, which does suggest that relevance is not the problem, but the unrest that he spoke about is clearly there for the time being. Five rounds in, you call that meeting. What happens next? It does create a heightened environment around it. 1300 736 736 to have your say. This is Waitley for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy, and experience the new BMW 3 Series at Doncaster BMW. Thanks, Meredith. We're just getting word that Fremantle is going to head to the tribunal. The two-week suspension that was handed down to, it was Taylor Dumain, wasn't it? From the game on Saturday. So the two-week suspension, they're going to take that to the tribunal. It was striking Lockie Whitfield that he was assessed for. That'll get tested at the tribunal. We wait to see what Michael Christian is going to do on the Tom Hawkins elbow into the back or the kidneys of James Sicily in the last quarter, the third quarter yesterday. Rob's in Narre Warren on 1300 736 736. Rob, welcome.
Hi, Robert. Hi, Jared. How are you?
Very well.
Jared, I want to talk about Melbourne.
Yep.
But what I don't understand is, why is that the media's not saying anything about the coach? I'm sick and tired of listening to the dribble that comes from the Melbourne coach. I've been a Melbourne supporter for 30 years, and every time there are excuses. We can't move the ball. The defense is a problem. Our fitness, we didn't have a preseason. We were injured. It's just excuses. Nothing to say that we as a coach, we need to take responsibility, because our midfield is absolutely pathetic. It's not the defense that's the issue. Viney can't win a ball. Jones can't win a ball. Petrarca can't do anything. We've got two Wagners useless. We've got two McDonald's useless. And I don't know what the coach does. I mean, we've heard this dribble last year. Yes, Melbourne might have made a prelim. But any other coach would have made a prelim with the team that we have got.
Really?
Rosie handed over her team. That's absolutely great. But I think it's the coaches that need to take criticism more than the players.
Well, I reckon they'd be working tirelessly to sort it out. He has been re-signed to a long-term contract. It would obviously be under pressure, just not pressure for his job. It's hard to imagine, given what we lived through in the back part of last year, that we would turn so quickly. But Melbourne have problems everywhere that you look, and they need to be resolved, and they need to be resolved immediately. Tomorrow night, really. That's the backdrop as we head to the G for Anzac Eve. And I do think there's a... You can have reasons without them being excuses. Simon Goodwin was pretty clear after, I think it was round two, he said... No, no excuses. Judge us as we are, and the judgments are coming, and they're coming harshly and quite justified. Most of what you read and hear at the moment about Melbourne is true. There's barely an ounce of overreaction to it, other than perhaps that as the extreme bloke. Although Grant has texted through immediately, amen to this bloke. So there you go. Hey, there was one story on Sunday. There are all sorts of Easter Sunday vigils. Riley O'Brien and Peter Wright were on the ground together playing for the Suns and the Crows. And it took a few minds back to the under-10s at the Moonee Valley Football Club when they played together, and their dads, who coached them at various stages along the way, I'm told they took the road trip over to go and see their boys on an AFL field playing against each other. Norm is Peter's dad. Norm Wright, welcome to SEN.
Hey, Jared, good to be on, mate.
Tell us about the under-10s at Moonee Valley.
Yeah, well, the boys have known each other since I was 7 and 8 years old. Riley's just a year older than Pete. Two tall redheads playing back in the under-10s a long time ago. Both redheads, one more 35, one more 36. So trying to pick them out from the other side of the ground got a bit hard at times, but we managed to do it most of the time.
How close did the Wrights and the O'Briens become over the years?
Oh, very close, very close. We've been around to the O'Briens on Christmas morning a few times and shared a few memories and photos, and got a photo of the three O'Brien boys with Pete, and they all look like the one family, to be honest.
So what was Saturday, oh, Sunday like for the families?
Yeah, it was good. It's good. Damo and I didn't sit together. We went to our respective supporter bases, but it was a pretty good lead-up. Damien and myself have been planning the road trip since the fixture came out late last year, and yeah, lived up to expectations. The game was a bit one-sided and flat, but we won't go there too much.
Drove back together?
No, I had to get back early on the Monday, and Damien had to. He was going back to Horsham for another family dinner, so we did stop at Horsham on the way up for O'Brien family dinner, which is Damien's hometown. That was really well done. So we had the fish, obviously, on Good Friday. Yeah, very nice meal from the family.
Is it right that you both coached the boys at various stages through the juniors?
We did. So Damien and one of his friends coached Riley and Pete in their first couple of years of under-10s. We're not sure which one was a premiership coach and which one was a premiership runner, but you know, they both share the responsibilities there.
Yep.
Damien and I coached Riley and Pete together in the under-14s for a year.
When you're there in those days, and the boys clearly had talent, I think, so is it right that so Peter always looked like he'd thrive and Riley did it slightly harder? Is that the assessment I've been told?
Yeah, it's pretty fair. Pete was always relatively dominant in the juniors and Riley had worked really hard. Riley focused a lot on his schooling as well as his football. He was probably more balanced that way than Pete. And Riley did his year 12 and did exceptionally well there with the, I'm going to hopefully get this right, at least 99.65 on his ATAR.
Right.
So he was well balanced in his what would have been draft year, but he came back and did an extra year in the Calder Cannons as an overage player, which they're allowed to do, and that obviously played dividends for him.
Would you have imagined in those years watching them play for Moonee Valley that one day they'd be on an AFL ground together?
Not so much. It was always a hope that they'd be on an AFL ground together, but this was the first time they'd actually played against each other in any sort of competitive environment other than training fuels at Moonee Valley and Calder Cannons.
Yeah, right. Did you talk to Peter in the aftermath of it?
I did. He doesn't normally shake hands with his opponent before the game, but he said as he was running through the middle of the ground to take his position, he had to respect the occasion and shook hands with Riley and wished him luck. So that was nice.
Very nice. Are they the pride of Moonee Valley?
Yeah, they are. We've got a couple other boys out there too. So Lukey Ryan played his final year of junior footy at Moonee Valley, and Lyndon Dunn, I would say, is running around, but he's hobbling around at the moment. So we've got a few of the boys out there, and they're all looking to donate a signed jumper to Moonee Valley so we can raffle those off at our pavilion launch in a couple of weeks' time on Friday the 3rd.
Sounds like, Norm, you've maintained an active involvement with them as well.
Yeah, get down and support as much as I can. A couple of my friends who are probably listening in now are involved well and truly in running the club, being president and administration for quite a few years now. So, yes, it's a good friendship to have.
Brilliant. What a great thing to do. Two families linked together by junior footy, road trip dads across the border to the Adelaide Oval. That's a brilliant footy story, Norm.
It was great fun.
Good on you. Thanks for sharing a bit of it with us.
Thanks, Sharon.
Norm Wright, the father of Peter Wright, Peter and Riley O'Brien playing together in Moonee Valley and following their football dreams to different clubs, but meeting as opponents on Easter Sunday at the Adelaide Oval. So Norm Wright recounting a bit of that story. There's a stack of messages still to work through. There's calls to be taken. We'll hear from Matthew Cruiser, part of his press conference that he's had. We heard a little earlier on a Canning Carlton supporter pointing out just what a difference that he has made in Damien Hardwick ahead of tomorrow night, as well as reflecting on all that's taken place so far this morning.
Rodriguez Chico got a good start. Bailey will lead them for a long way. The White Leonard King going well. Now the favourite starting to surge through. Rodriguez Chico takes over the lead and the favourite's going to win. Groove is in the groove. The red comes to grief at the end, Conte, but it's Groove Rodriguez Chico who gets his name on the stall honour roll. He's the champion in 2019.
The 138th running of the stall gift is captured by Peter Donegan on Channel 7. Yesterday, Robert Irving has lived the recent history of the stall gift in most of the key roles around the club and the event. He's an executive committee member of the stall gift. Robert, welcome to SEN.
Good morning, Jared.
Was yesterday's a successful staging of the event?
Absolutely. Great crowds, great weather and superb running.
What was the crowd?
the crowd, we don't have the figure yet, but I'd say around 12,000, which is a pretty good Easter for us.
How do you measure these days?
We measure by the tickets that come through the gate, and I'm sitting here this morning counting the tickets.
That's a lovely image, Robert. This has had, so we spoke about this yesterday. It's such a cherished event, such a part of sporting folklore in Victoria in particular. The modern challenges of finding the corporate support to ensure that it thrives. Is what's the lot of the Stall Gift at the moment?
Well, we're in that stage where we're looking for a major sponsor. We've had fantastic support from our state government and our local council indeed, and our local traders. So we think we're on the right path, but it would be wonderful to find another sponsor in this very crowded market.
How connected is the local community in what you're describing there to something that they've come to cherish over more than a century?
Well, certainly the level of support that they give us indicates that they cherish the thing and they want to see it continue. So we will continue to strive to do that. We're certainly working as hard as we possibly can in the background to find that sponsor. And if there's any sponsors out there, we give great value for money.
So how challenging is it, Robert?
It's very challenging, but I don't think that we're on our own in that, that there are a number of sports that are challenging for trying to find those sponsors as we are. But I think we've got something that we can offer, which is slightly different. I hope it's different.
What is it? What's your pitch?
Our pitch is we run the best carnival in Australia, the biggest crowds for an athletic meeting in Australia, and we have the best running. But we also give a great story out into the public of how a country town can show what it can produce with support of its sponsors and supporters.
Is it a year-to-year proposition for the time being?
I hope not. We've certainly been able to keep going this long, and I'm certain we'll continue. The questions will be at what level we'll be able to continue if we don't find that major sponsor. And we're going into a review process now after Easter to see how we might restructure how we operate and see if we can do it better, number one, but two, make it more attractive.
Is the prize money that you're offering, so for the time being, it seemed like there's a debate around getting Australia's best athletes, the highest ranked athletes, to come to Stall, and that the prize money is at a level where it should be able to. Are you not getting quite the calibre of athlete that you might across the board?
I think we are. I don't have any doubt about the quality of the athletes. And if I go to the women's side, Lauren Wells was here and won a race at 200 metre against the men this weekend. And she loves the place because it's a different style of running, but really involved because you've got a huge crowd right on the fence and baying for blood. It's wonderful stuff.
So would you like more of the top-ranked Australian athletes to take up that?
Oh, absolutely. Of course we would. And if we had sufficient funds, we'd get some overseas ones as well. But that's at the moment, we think our Australian athletes are a great draw card. And they're not stopping coming, so that's a really good thing.
Have some of them lost sight of the charms? As Kathy Freeman's appearances at Stall are part of folklore, and they routinely get raised when we get to Easter. Has a generation lost sight of how great those events can be?
I don't think so. I think there is such a crowded calendar for athletes now. The timing of the Australian Championships, World Championships, all those sorts of things play into that. But certainly we get, I believe, great support from our elite athletes. And we enjoy having them here. I mean, we had Josh Ross again this weekend, and he's 38 years old but still got to the semi-finals. He was brilliant.
Do you have ambitions to be able to raise the prize money, or is the challenge to maintain what's there?
I would think we would want to raise the prize money over time, and that will come with sponsorship because we are a volunteer group, so we're not taking anything off the top. So we believe that we give great value for money in running a spectacular event.
How broad's the volunteer army that got involved yesterday or over the days of the carnival?
About 150, 200 people were involved because you've got our committee, which is 20, plus you have their families. So in my own family, there were five of us here. And families from around town, they come from Melbourne, all over the place to help us. We had timekeepers who come from Adelaide. So it's a wide base. Plus, we have the local football clubs who run the bar. One local football club does the clean-up for us. Mm-hmm. We involve local organisations and people as much as we possibly can.
It's a great community event, Robert, and it deserves the spotlight that it gets. So good luck. Good luck in maintaining it and growing it yet further.
Thank you very much, Jared.
Let's get back to counting those tickets and finding out how many went. Robert Irvine, who's the executive committee member for the Stall Gift. The news with Meredith.
Harley Heaven, stop dreaming and start riding.
Making SEN news this hour, Scott Morrison is in Adelaide today trying to spruik his small business election promise, but instead he spent the morning batting away questions over Watergate and potential preference deals with Clive Palmer. A British couple who have been living in Perth since 2013 have been named as two of the eight British nationals killed in the Easter Sunday terror attacks in Sri Lanka. Two Adelaide men have been ordered to stand trial after they allegedly fractured a teenager's skull during an alcohol-fuelled brawl in the CBD. And the Department of Veteran Affairs has put bakeries and cafes on notice ahead of Anzac Day. They warn if you mess with the traditional Anzac biscuit recipe, then you could face a fine of more than $50,000. SEN.com.au Sport coming up.
Happy Tint. Happy Tint your home, your office, your car. Call 1-800-HAPPY-TINT.
Richmond skipper Trent Cotchin remains several weeks away from an AFL return after having a setback in his recovery from a hamstring injury. And Chelsea has blown the chance to go third in the English Premier League after settling for a 2-2 draw with Burnley. Weather up next.
Hi, it's Dr. Turf. The all-new SEN app is here. Live stream all our SEN channels and sports. Catch up on all your favourite show podcasts, plus play tipping and enter all our competitions.
Rain, hail or shine, if you're digging for a living, the conditions are always perfect at Supergroups, Victoria's number one Kubota construction dealer.
Cloudy today at top of 19 degrees. The clouds should start to clear tomorrow, 21, and a few clouds for Anzac Day. Right now it's 17 degrees.
Thanks, Meredith. We're just getting word that Fremantle is going to head to the tribunal. The two-week suspension that was handed down to, it was Taylor Dumain, wasn't it? From the game on Saturday. So the two-week suspension, they're going to take that to the tribunal. It was striking Lachie Whitfield that he was assessed for. That'll get tested at the tribunal. We wait to see what Michael Christian is going to do on the Tom Hawkins elbow into the back of the kidneys of James Sicily in the last quarter, the third quarter yesterday. Rob's in Narre Warren on 1300 736 736. Rob, welcome.
Hi, Robert. Hi, Jared. How are you?
Very well.
Jared, I want to talk about Melbourne.
Yep.
But what I don't understand is, why is that the media's not saying anything about the coach? I'm sick and tired of listening to the dribble that comes from the Melbourne coach. I've been a Melbourne supporter for 30 years, and every time there are excuses. We can't move the ball. The defense is a problem. Our fitness, we didn't have a preseason. We were injured. It's just excuses, excuses. Nothing to say that we as a coach, we need to take responsibility, because our midfield is absolutely pathetic. It's not the defense that's the issue. Viney can't win a ball. Jones can't win a ball. Petrarca can't do anything. We've got two Wagners useless. We've got two McDonalds useless. And I don't know. I don't know what the coach does. I mean, we've heard this dribble last year. Yes, Melbourne might have made a prelim, but any other coach would have made a prelim with the team that we have got.
Really?
Rosie handed over her team. That's absolutely great. But I think it's the coaches that need to take criticism more than the players.
Well, I reckon they'd be working tirelessly to sort it out. He has been re-signed to a long-term contract. It would obviously be under pressure, just not pressure for his job. It's hard to imagine, given what we lived through in the back part of last year, that we would turn so quickly. But Melbourne have problems everywhere that you look, and they need to be resolved, and they need to be resolved immediately. Tomorrow night, really. That's the backdrop as we head to the G for Anzac Eve. And I do think there's a – you can have reasons without them being excuses. Simon Goodwin was pretty clear after, I think it was round two, he said, no, don't – no excuses. judge us as we are, and the judgments are coming, and they're coming harshly and quite justified. Most of what you read and hear at the moment about Melbourne is true. There's barely an ounce of overreaction to it, other than perhaps that as the extreme bloke. Although Grant has texted through immediately, amen to this bloke. So there you go. Hey, there was one story on Sunday. There are all sorts of Easter Sunday vigils. Riley O'Brien and Peter Wright were on the ground together playing for the Suns and the Crows. And it took a few minds back to the under-10s at the Moonee Valley Football Club when they played together, and their dads, who coached them at various stages along the way, I'm told they took the road trip over to go and see their boys on an AFL field playing against each other. Norm is Peter's dad. Norm Wright, welcome to SEN.
Hey, Jared, good to be on, mate.
Tell us about the under-10s at Moonee Valley.
Yeah, well, the boys have known each other since I was 7 and 8 years old. Riley's just a year older than Pete. Two tall redheads playing back in the under-10s a long time ago. Both redheads, one more 35, one more 36. So trying to pick them out from the other side of the ground got a bit hard at times, but we managed to do it most of the time.
How close did the Wrights and the O'Briens become over the years?
Oh, very close, very close. We've been around to the O'Briens on Christmas morning a few times and shared a few memories and photos, and got a photo of the three O'Brien boys with Pete, and they all look like the one family, to be honest.
So what was Saturday? Oh, Sunday like for the families?
Yeah, it was good. It's good. Damo and I didn't sit together. We went to our respective supporter bases, but it was a pretty good lead-up. Damien and myself have been planning the road trip since the fixture came out late last year, and yeah, lived up to expectations. The game was a bit one-sided and flat, but we won't go there too much.
Drove back together?
No, I had to get back early on the Monday, right. But and Damien had to. He was going back to Horsham for another family dinner. So we did stop at Horsham on the way up for O'Brien family dinner, which is Damien's hometown. That was really well done. So we had the fish, obviously, on Good Friday. Yeah, very nice meal from the family.
Is it right that you both coached the boys at various stages through the juniors?
We did. So Damien and one of his friends coached Riley and Pete in their first couple of years of under-10s. We're not sure which one was a premiership coach and which one was a premiership runner, but you know, they both share the responsibilities there.
Yep.
Yeah, Damien and I coached Riley and Pete together in under-14s for a year.
When you're there in those days, and the boys clearly had talent, I think, so is it right that, so Peter always looked like he'd thrive and Riley did it slightly harder? Is that the assessment I've been told?
Yeah, it's pretty fair. Pete was always relatively dominant in the juniors and Riley had worked really hard. Riley focused a lot on his schooling as well as his football. He was probably more balanced that way than Pete. And Riley did his year 12 and did exceptionally well there with the, I'm going to hopefully get this right, at least 99.65 on his ATAR.
Right.
So he was well balanced in his what would have been draft year, but he came back and did the next year in the Calder Cannons as a overage player, which they're allowed to do, and that obviously played dividends for him.
Would you have imagined in those years watching them play for Moonee Valley that one day they'd be on an AFL ground together?
Not so much. It was always a hope that they'd be on an AFL ground together, but this was the first time they'd actually played against each other in any sort of competitive environment other than training duels at Moonee Valley and Calder Cannons.
Yeah, right. Did you talk to Peter in the aftermath of it?
I did. He doesn't normally shake hands with his opponent before the game, but he said as he was running through the middle of the ground to take his position, he had to respect the occasion and shook hands with Riley and wished him luck. So that was nice.
Very nice. Are they the pride of Moonee Valley?
Yeah, they are. We've got a couple other boys out there too. So Lukey Ryan played his final year of junior footy at Moonee Valley, and Lyndon Dunn, I would say, is running around, but he's hobbling around at the moment. So we've got a few of the boys out there, and they're all looking to donate a signed jumper to Moonee Valley so we can raffle those off at our pavilion launch in a couple of weeks' time on Friday the 3rd.
Sounds like, Norm, you've maintained an active involvement with them as well.
Yeah, get down and support as much as I can. A couple of my friends who are probably listening in now are involved well and truly in running the club, being president and administration for quite a few years now. So, yes, it's a good friendship to have.
Brilliant. What a great thing to do. Two families linked together by junior footy, road trip dads across the border to the Adelaide Oval. That's a brilliant footy story, Norm.
It was great fun.
Good on you. Thanks for sharing a bit of it with us.
Thanks, Sherry.
Norm Wright, the father of Peter Wright, Peter and Riley O'Brien playing together in Moonee Valley and following their football dreams to different clubs, but meeting as opponents on Easter Sunday at the Adelaide Oval. So Norm Wright recounting a bit of that story. There's a stack of messages still to work through. There's calls to be taken. We'll hear from Matthew Cruiser, part of his press conference that he's had. We heard a little earlier on a Canning Carlton supporter pointing out just what a difference that he has made in Damien Hardwick ahead of tomorrow night, as well as reflecting on all that's taken place so far this morning. Thanks for listening to the Best of Waitley podcast. This is just a sampling of the topics we covered on air. If your ears are burning for more, you can head to sen.com.au. For now, whether it's on the dial, a smartphone, or even a smartwatch, thanks for joining us on 11:16 SEN. We'll be back to do it all again tomorrow from 9.